Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Okay, welcome into the Six Again podcast. We are back on track and it's going to be a decent show because Jared's over in Perth. So back on board with WOL. I've had a couple of episodes off, I think, over the last couple of months, which has been odd after having like an Ironman streak for the first 2 years. But before we get into everything, I've got to ask, Wal, how did your Tinder plan work Sunday night?
To be honest, mate, I all the excitement from winning on my bets, I carked it and fell asleep on the couch.
So I was going to say, if it didn't go down as planned, it's the only thing Nick, well, hasn't won on the weekend. Full round in tipping, plus another 129 into the Six Again comp, which is what, a tenth of what he won on the weekend? Bloody hell.
Yeah, so in the last 3 weekends, I've turned $50 into $1,800. Yeah, so not bad. Not bad going at all.
Ladies.
When you're hot, you're hot.
Well, anyone, line up. I'm not even going to just pigeonhole this into ladies.
Beggars can't be choosers, mate, you know?
And one of only two in the 6-in comp to get a full round. Just bloody absolutely killing. I've already thought about maybe for the finals we'll change Nick's picks to Wal's wallet because there we are. I was thinking that
Wally's wallet.
Wally's wallet. There we go. Oh, I'm not going to say that one. Jared didn't put a bet on last week, supposedly, so he's still on $60 and I'm on $140 because I haven't been on a preview show for a couple of weeks. So Maddie even had the idea of if we put money into the betting account, we'll just go off Wal's tips, but you're not keen on that one.
Oh, it's too much pressure. Whenever I go out of my way to let people know, like, how bad was I to start the year?
Yeah,
once you brought me on with Nick's picks.
Yeah,
and I was down to $30, and then obviously four consecutive wins in a row helps. But
oh, bloody yeah, God.
We'll see. Oh, see what we can come up with this week.
Sorry, I said you were one of two. It was one of three. I've just jumped over to the Footy Tips website. So Ben Hunt for Dally M, there he is. A Trakanajov, first time I've seen that one. And Paraplegics, who I'm pretty sure is Billy. Is it Jared's bro? All with four rounds this week. And let's see if that picks you up on the leaderboard. So with one round to go, oh gosh, I've dropped. That's right. I've had three rounds in a row of six, and that's cost me big time. Six used to be a good score, eh? I swear back when I was growing up. Back in my day. yeah, you got like six. You're killing it. Not to be. So Rocking Horse Road is on top on 160 with 7 out of 8. To go with the 7 out of 8 last week. The underscore Irks on 158, so 2 points behind. So he's going to have to throw something out there. And then Reggie Sidestep on 154 and myself on 154. So that's my dad, I'm pretty sure. So we don't want my dad or me winning third place because if I win, I don't have to give out merch. And if he wins, he won't shut up about letting us know. So Sharkopolis and Spencer Blues are both on 152. So you might have to throw some things out. And no offense, I think everyone else is out of calculation by now. Oof. So it's not bad having a 2-point buffer going into the last round. And I always love this. Let's have a look at the streaking competition. So,
mate, I should have put all 8 tips in.
Oh, no way. Yeah, if you put all 8. Because bloody Lydia's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ben Liner, the winner from last year, picked up 5 this week to catapult himself past his previous total of, no, sorry, underscore R3 was 15. So Benny Liner's on 18.
Holy shit.
18. I had, I only got 2 this round because I was late on the street competition. I only picked up 2. So I'm on 13. Sorry, that can't be right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, it's got me on 12. Yeah, there's no way. I'd have to pick all 8 for the final round.
What am I on? I know I got 5 this week.
Yeah, you're on 11. So
I'd have to get the perfect 8.
Yeah, so at the moment.
I'm filthy. I had the rabbits as one of my one of my streak. And then when I saw Damien Cook was out, I'm like, nah, I'm not blowing it. Because I didn't realise, Benny was that high up, but well played.
Yeah, well played. And in the street comp, it's just the winner takes that one. So he's pretty much got it wrapped up. So the only one that can really beat that would be me. And I need to get 7 or 8 out of 8 and hope he gets none, which I don't think that's going to happen. So we can always wrap that one up, unless he forgets to put his actual tips in.
Is it active streak wins it, or is it just the best streak over the year?
Yeah, best streak over the year.
Okay.
Yeah, longest streak. So he's on 18, and so that's both the longest current and the longest overall. Crazy.
This could be the week, though. There's a few tough results this week, a few tough tips. So, dare to dream.
All right, let's start off with what caught your eye over the weekend. And we did see Jared's name pop up, and it would be actually kind of funny to bring him in, because I picked mine for no other reason than to spite him for his apparent hatred of the Titans. So who caught your eye over the weekend? There were some standout performances across the board.
How many do you want? Just one or?
Whatever, go for it. I'm having a beer on a Monday night. Nothing that matters.
Yeah. Well, first one's going to be from a purely selfish point of view, and it's Zach Lomax. I've been really impressed with him the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's got back to doing the hard stuff, and I was quite critical of him earlier in the year. He's for the flashy play a lot, and throwing flick passes into touch, and was a victim of his own, I think. Good year last year, but on the weekend, like he just did the hard work. He earned everything he got, and he was rewarded with the try, and then obviously the match winning penalty goal on the siren. So that was really good to see, because he's copped a lot in the media, and I don't think the publishing of everyone's salaries probably helped that, because now everyone knows how much we paid him. That was really good to see. I'm trying to think over the weekend. I reckon another one, Hudson Young.
Oh yeah.
I've been big on him for the last month, especially with my bets. And I wasn't necessarily a massive fan of him, but now that he keeps standing up and scoring in my multis, he's one of my favorite players.
Hey, pretty much all you have to do is pay well and you're getting his team of the week, pretty much.
Yeah, heavy stuff, mate.
Just for the weekend, AJ Brimson was awesome. I just love watching this guy play, and I think he's been a victim of one injury, but also just the inconsistency of the lineup of the Titans. Because I think there's been probably 3 times through his career now, let's say 3, where he's had a consistent run in the same position with similar players around him. I'm not going to say the same as the Titans, but similar players around him. And when he's in the position to do that, like what he did on the weekend, he's just awesome to watch. I haven't even looked at his stats, but he was incredible. But I think in a game like that, where it was Newcastle and Titans and neither of them can defend and end up being tries everywhere, someone like Tino in the middle may get missed. I just wanted to go through his stat line for the weekend. And 257 metres of 23 carries. So 16 of his 23 carries went for 8 metres or more. This is ridiculous. He had 2 tackle busts, 3 offloads, 30 tackles as well. That's massive.
That's Tino, was it?
Yeah.
And a try assist as well.
Yeah,
and
it was huge effort by the captain in their last home game of the season to pick up the 2 points there. All right, I want to, before we get into any other NRL news, Wald did, and I pulled out at literally in the last hour, went out and watched some live footy on the weekend, went out and watched our ex, well, the team that we both used to play for, well, a lot more recent than myself, the Palmy Devils in their prelim final.
Major semi-final. So, 1 versus 2, and Palmer finished second and beat first in their own turf, 32-20. So grand final 2 weeks' time. How good.
I was stoked to see that because they versed Merry Valley twice this year in the regular season, and one was for the President's Cup, so the top two on the ladder. I think they went down,
it was 16-6
or something. Yeah, tight game.
Yep.
And Merry Valley play out about 45 minutes or so from Palmwoods, well, closer to an hour actually. Really nice area, but it's like kind of out in the bush compared to where we are. And I remember when we used to play out there, it was all that, oh man, this drive's going to suck, or we get on the bus or whatever. And
yeah, we had 10 players.
Yeah, we had 10 players rock up, so there couldn't be stuff going out there. And we know they'd belt us because they're always a good team. But it was a nice field. I think it was the last field I played. I think I retired at the end of that season. We played there. Special crowd there. They're on your back from memory. And 32-20, I'm don't have any fixtures or results, but I'm assuming that's probably the highest points anyone's put on them this season, especially on their absolutely. Home paddock.
Oh, actually, I think they got 30-odd put on them by Yandina last week, but that was because they had like 13 or 14 players. I'm missing a lot of players. So,
okay.
But yeah, full strength. It was a bloody good win. And we had 2 length of the field tries to start the game, which really got us off on the front foot.
Oh,
Chad
nice.
Rice, he's a buddy. He's playing our touch footy team. He's just an absolute whipper, eh? He's so quick. And he's got the arrogance that, like, he gets 10 men's into space and then he starts smiling because he knows no one's going to catch him.
Oh, I'd have that ability. It'd be sick. Must be what someone like Saab feels like, and even in the top level or at Ocar, once you're in space, you're just like, this is sick.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I get into space and I'll turn around and wait for look for someone to tackle me. I remember my very first game playing. Right, this is getting a bit off topic, but first game playing for the Devils, which I was a fresh 19-year-old. I played barely any footy as a kid. Stuck on the wing. I took an intercept and got run down by a prop.
Oh, and then, yeah.
10 years later, I'm in the team of the decade on the bench. So there you go.
There we go. Look at that. Yeah, youngsters out there, you can aspire to great things.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. So I think I played for maybe 4 years, 4 or 5 years, whatever. And every season we were horrible, last or second last on the ladder. And to hear Palmer get to a grand final, and this is Div 2, but it doesn't matter. It's grand final.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'll be there.
Yeah.
Sunny Coast Stadium.
Jared and I were in the 2018 grand final, which we unfortunately went down a tight one there. Yeah.
That was,
what was it? Stanley Rivers.
Stanley Rivers.
Yeah, who went out and played A grade the next year. So, we did pretty well that year to only go down 14-6. But, yeah, hopefully the boys can right the wrongs.
Yeah, I can't wait. So it's Sunny Coast Stadium, which is the home away for home for Melbourne, and hosts a couple of NRL games a season. So it's a pretty big deal. So let's go Devils. And the only, I guess, good news coming out of Manly over the last month or so is that in the 2023 season, they'll be fielding a team in the Tasha Gale Cup. So it's the under-19 female junior rep competition. So this will be the first women's team in Manly Seagull history, with the intention of applying for an NRLW license for the 2025 season. So it gives them 3 years to basically build a product, or two years to build a squad there. And this is interesting. I saw here was NRL head coach Des Hasler is looking forward to chartering new territory by overseeing the club's first ever female pathway program. I thought that was quite interesting wording, that the NRL head coach is overseeing the club's female pathway program. That seems like a pretty big job for someone who's a NRL coach.
I think it's great though. Like, it's just, he's unearthed so many of, the Manly legends in of the past, decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, for him to help get that established for the women's game, I think that's great. And it's really good to, like, at the end of the day, they're one big club, right? And it's good to see. Like, I remember I went to the NRLW Grand Final last year, the Roosters Dragons, and, you know, Trent Robinson, a couple other players were there from the men's, there watching and supporting. They had no right to be there, really. They played in Brisbane 2 or 3 days earlier, but they stayed up there to watch it. So, yeah, it's let's hope that that continues. And I think that's a great move. Like, Des is the mad scientist, so I'm sure he'll be. Yeah, no, that's great.
First signing already in the works. Isabel Kelly comes home to Manly, their first season, however many premierships she's won, veteran of the league. Perfect, perfect first signing. Love it. You heard it here first. So that's all the background stuff with regards to the weekend. So nothing like a thinly veiled empty threat by the NRL to throw out right before finals time. So Graham Annesley's come out and warned players who repeatedly attract minor charges from the match review committee may be hit with a higher grading and increased penalty as a personal deterrent. To me, this seems extremely coincidental coming after the Storm Roosters game where you have Jared Warrior-Hargraves and Nelson Asofa-Solomona playing, who also coincidentally both picked up minor infractions and who also incidentally are the two players that most people or fans talk about with regards to their technique and, I don't know, what's the other word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
On the field.
I don't have many many positive words to say right now. So let's just say they're antics. They're on-field antics.
Antics, there we go. How they go about the game. Now,
You go.
No, I was just saying, so Solomona so far this year has $11,800 worth of fines that he's had to pay over five different charges. And Warrior Hargraves has had four charges. So these are all grade one charges. And the threat is if you keep getting them, there'll be stronger action and they may upgrade some of those grade ones to a grade two as a personal deterrent, which would then obviously invoke a suspension. Timing, odd. The fact that it's gotten to four for one player, five for another player, odd. And the NRL's like taking back close to $20,000 between these two players. So they're getting like literally free money back. They said only one player's, this has only ever happened to one player where they've upgraded it, and that was Josh McGuire in 2019 while playing for the Cowboys. Another player who has specific antics on the field. What do you think about all this? Is this similar to, we're going to crack down on play the balls, and I don't think anyone's been pulled up for a play the ball this year.
Even if they don't use their foot. This is just, I can't believe Asofa Solomona has been suspended this year. This is the second time. Actually, he did it twice in the game on Friday night where he's tackled him and then thrown the elbow down.
Yeah.
And first time he did it, cracks Wade Egan's teeth. But apparently that wasn't enough force for it to warrant a suspension.
That one was the grey. We broke that one down where it didn't fit into any of the categories. It wasn't a head slam. It wasn't a crusher. And it wasn't a...
It's dangerous contact, isn't it?
I can't remember what it ended up being done for. But he literally came fracture, on and explained.
If you crack someone's teeth, it's dangerous contact. Like, what are we talking about? Like,
I know.
And then he did it to Sawali and just missed him. And then he did it to Crichton later in the game and did it to into the chest. And I think he got pinged for that one. But, like, how many times are you going to let
this away? He ended up getting pinged for the one on Sawali. That's the one.
And he didn't even make contact on him. Like, that was intention. But he actually got pinged. That one went
that was picked up by, the match review. Yeah.
Yeah. And Warrior Hargraves, like, what can I say? Like, it was just always going to happen, right? So there was all this niggle to start the game. Then they get the warning, like, next time something happens, you're going in the bin. The very next hit up, Nelson runs straight into Warrior Hargraves, and then he just carries on with it.
The initial shot was all right.
Great shot. Yeah, but then but on the ground, he's grappling him, then he headbutts him. Like, I don't understand how they just. Yeah, it's great to watch and all that, but like
to a point. Like
people were saying this is rugby league,
I'm going.
That's not in the rules. It's not in the rules. I'm so sick of this shit where people are like, "Oh, that was just a tackle back in our day." Blah blah. The game's evolved. Like, you don't need that anymore to sell tickets to a game. Like
the hit at the start was rugby league. Exactly the carry on afterwards was. No, if you're not going to stand up and punch, then you've got to be. Then you've got to do a full Ben Cray and get the hell out of there. Don't do the half shit in the middle. But I think after that, I was watching the game and I tweeted out. I love it. I put it out from the account, like I'm speaking for both Jared and I, but it's literally just me. And I'm going, if there's one player I'm glad my club let go, it's Jared Warrior Hargraves. And I get that he's won premierships and that, but also. Oh, and I also get what he brings to a club, but you can do that without being a douche. Like, you look at James Fisher-Harris is a perfect example of what he brings to Penrith. He's almost the exact style of player as Hargraves, but he's actually got a brain on his shoulders. He doesn't get into all this. Like, I'm trying to think if he's been even sin bin this year. Fisher-Harris. No, okay. I was just frozen for a second. But anyway, I'll keep talking. Yeah, and I think the reply I got back was from, I'd say, obviously, yeah, a Rooster supporter going, "Probs why your club is horrendous." I went, "Huh. Okay, cool." Not having Hargraves the reason why our club's horrendous. And then hashtag jog on. Well, yeah, great context. But he's not the reason they won the premierships and he's part of it, obviously, because of what he brings outside of all the antics and all that sort of shit, the aggression and all that. Teams need that.
I think he's a big driver of what they've got. He's a big driver of what they've got there. Year after year, I doubt him, but he just peaks at the right time every year, and he gets everyone else going.
Where is it? I reckon he can do that. Without being the douche.
Absolutely.
That's what I mean. Like Fisher-Harris with the Penrith. I'm assuming he's a great teammate. Everyone within the club talks about the passion. He'll back you up and all that sort of stuff. And I get that. I'd have a hard time supporting him, I think, if he was in my jersey. And I've had players go through Manly where I'm like, I get that they're playing well, but I'm not going to be sad if they left. And he was one of them. Liam Knight was another one. And he went to the Roosters and the Rabbitohs and was still been making dumb decisions. But anyway, I doubt that they'll get suspended unless they do something. Oh, no. Unless they do something completely crazy that they've already done.
If Asafa Solomono does that again, he's gone. He has to be.
Yes. I think people said that the first, second, third, fourth, fifth time. Sixth time lucky, double three. We'll see. Contrary to that, there's a great article up here on NRL.com that literally says winning for fun and inside Penrith's remarkable three-year run and their record over those three seasons, 74 matches, 64 wins, 9 losses and a draw. And it's ridiculous. And for that sustained excellence, they've had 2 grand final appearances, 1 win, 1 loss, and 2 minor premierships. And this kind of comes off the back of something else I saw on social media where someone went, for all of their recent success, if Penrith only win one premiership with this team, is that a failure? And a lot of people were saying yes. And to me, I went to reply and then sat back and went, I think recency bias is such a strong driver. For fans, to me, if they have all the success and win one premiership, it's a success. You've won a premiership. You have a look at how long Parramatta, West Tigers, Warriors haven't got one at all, and they've been to one, two, what, three grand finals? Two?
Just two, yeah.
How long it's been for the Bulldogs. All these clubs, haven't won one in this long. Storm are outliers for a reason, because they've been up there for that long and they've had their grand finals along with it. Asterisks, they're damned either way. But to me, it's they've already achieved the ultimate. They're just now trying to achieve it again and again and again.
I think, I think the Storm and the Roosters have ruined it for everyone else, right? Everyone's waiting for the next team to come in and just dominate. And I think it's not fair to expect that of a playing group. Like the, well, not, it's unrealistic, I think. Like, you look at how hard it is to go back to back. Everyone's like, even the dominance of Melbourne, they never went back to back. The Roosters were the only team to do it since 92, 93. And even then, they limped over the line in the grand final. Like, it's a tough thing to do. And if it was that easy, you know, teams would be doing it every few years. But each year, teams improve and teams work out how to beat the best teams in the big games. So I don't think you can say, I'm with you. You can't say that a team winning a competition is a failure. All you can do is put yourself in the best position you possibly can for the end of the year. And at the end of the day, it comes down to who's best on that day. And two teams on the field, like, someone's got to walk off a loser, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's sport. It is funny how, like, things like this come up in completely different sports at the same time. And Red Wings had 25 straight years of playoffs, including multiple Stanley Cups in ice hockey, and now they're going 6 seasons without making the playoffs. And it's killing the fan base because they've been out of the playoffs for 6 years. Some teams there haven't won a premiership for over 50 years. And a question came in, would you rather win 3 premierships back-to-back-to-back and then not win one for 25 years, or would you rather win one every 8 years? So you have 3 in the same time period, but they're spaced out 8 years apart. So 25 years, you'd have 3 years of success and then like 23 or 25 years of failure. Or
how old am I in this? Like, will I live to see the next one in 25
years? Let's just say for now.
It's a great question, right? Like,
you go back to back, it's legendary because no one, not since St. George, right?
Yeah,
it's gone 3 in a row.
It's a different game,
It's a completely different game.
Power didn't go 3 in a row, did they?
In the 80s, I'd have to go back and have it. It was them, Canberra, and Manly popped up every now and then.
Yeah.
I'm not a historian, but it's a good question.
But it's a great question because even me, I'm like, Bennett came. We hadn't won for 31 years. We won in 2010. We've been in shambles ever since, but I'm like, it's still worth that premiership.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know if I could take 25 years. I'd probably go 1 in 8 years.
Yeah, I'd go 1 in 8 years.
I couldn't take 25 years of pain.
No way. All right, bumps and bruises from round 24. So Tom Eisenhuth is going to miss the rest of the season after suffering a grade 3 syndesmosis injury against the Roosters. And depth players are important through the season, but they're crucial in the finals. You have to have the next man up attitude. And that's another one of the depth players gone for Melbourne. They've been hit pretty hard with their depth players this season, as well as their top-notch players. Let's see, what else? Damien Cook is waiting the results of a PCR test. So he had to pull out from the weekend because of COVID. Victor Radley, oh, God, that was sickening. Concussion into a seizure on the field. They also talked about there's a chance he'll play again in a couple of weeks.
Well, so the NRL physio came out and said that the seizure doesn't necessarily mean it's a more severe concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's generally comes down to what the symptoms are afterwards. So as much as it probably looked a lot worse, it actually might not be that bad.
That bad. I was saying, how many concussions he had this year? I thought that was his third.
Probably his, it, Yeah, I'd say probably his third. They've been spaced out though. He hasn't had one for a while, I don't think. But like after the game, he was out. I was like, Jesus, like he could be straight to hospital. He's on the field having a laugh, shaking hands with everyone, and yeah, it's very surprising. Obviously, it's good to see, but like, surprising.
I've had three seizures, but none from a concussion. Both from waking up from, I'm going to call it just fainting. Yeah, from waking up from fainting in seizures. And, yeah, once they've finished, there's no, well, for me, there was no prolonged effect or anything like that, except for maybe my personality. But I don't know, Victor Adley, so that's all good. Daniel Tupou-Groin, also likely to miss this week as well. Appy Korosau believes he'll be fit after leaving the field with an ankle concern on Friday night. Spencer Lenu picked up a shoulder problem. He'd been sent for scans, bit of a serious concern, supposedly from the club. Sean Johnson failed to finish after picking up a calf injury. Adam Reynolds lasted just 13 minutes. He's 250th before failing a HIA. Tom Flegler was forced from the field with a throat injury after copping a blow when trying to tackle Regan Campbell-Gillard. Man, Flegler's hit so good. It was just like pure, and it was suspension or whatever. We'll see.
No, that wasn't him though. It was Jordan Rickey that got put on report for shoulder charge.
On Regan Campbell-Gillard.
Yeah, so if you watch it, Flegler comes from the side with a good shot, but Rickey was in front of him and is braced with a shoulder charge.
It's even worse. He did like, oh, fuck's sake. Bring it back. Jamie Etherington failed to finish the match after being up a HIA, and Brent Kelly picked up a hamstring injury. Tom Dearden missed his, we talked about that's his ruptured testicle.
See, they reckon he could be back this week.
Yeah. Land all out. Be a bit lighter.
They breed him tough up here, eh?
That's it.
Little gingers. They've got worse.
Patrick Herbert and Phil Sammy missed the side's victory over the Knights due to a head knock and a knee. I think that's... Oh, and Alex Saifar suffered a torn pec muscle, so he's done for the season as well. Okay. Judiciary, my favourite. Lindsay Collins will only play again this season if the Roosters make the grand final after being banned for 4 matches for a grade 3 dangerous contact. Dangerous contact offence against the Storm. So Roosters entered an early guilty plea, which arose from his tackle on Tom Eisenhuth late in Friday's match. Which one was that? Was that the lifting one?
No, it's hip drop.
Sorry. Victor Radley, grade 1, dangerous contact. And Waru Hargrave, grade 1, contrary conduct. Enter Gilly, please. We talked about that already. We talked about Solomona. Regan Campbell-Gillard's pleading not guilty to a dangerous contact offence on Flegler. He'll front the judiciary tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Cohen Hess will miss round 25 against Penrith after he took an early guilty plea. There's not going to be anyone on the field for that game with how many Penrith are... arresting, or supposedly arresting. Brian Kelly, this is the one, faced a long stint on the sidelines after he was charged with a grade 3 dangerous throw, which saw him sent off. Now, penalty, yes, definitely. Sin bin, fine. I didn't put this in the same category as the Carl Lawton or the
Nathan Cleary
one. To me, on this one, yes, he went above the horizontal, hence the penalty and sin bin, but he landed on the upper part of his back. There was a fair bit of his back that hit the ground first. I thought he was pretty hard done by, one, being sent, let alone, grade 3, that's pretty much already a guaranteed 4 weeks, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
4-match ban with an guilty plea.
I think he... I think there's got to be more that's taken into account because, I'm with you. I reckon he landed on his back, but it's a one-on-one tackle. He's hit him around the hips. He hasn't put his hands between the legs.
Yeah.
And it's a big guy who's running full pace at a little guy. So momentum of the tackle means that you know, he gets off the ground. The big guy's got
physics.
Exactly right. So I think it was a sin bin. I think he should have got a suspension for it, but not a grand three. I mean,
yes, I agree. Because I get what the NRL is trying to do, get rid of the spear tackles and with the shoulder charge and all that sort of stuff. But having a blanket rule is, to me, still doesn't rub me the right way, because they're not blanket tackles. It is completely different to the other two, but we'll have the same suspension. Asu Kapawa missed his side's final match after sent to the Simbin for a high shot on Dragon Center Zach Lomax, which resulted in a match-winning penalty goal. What was that call like as a Dragon supporter?
Oh, it was a penalty every day of the week.
Yeah, cool.
He's clocked him straight in the chin. Actually, no, straight in the nose with his shoulder.
Yeah.
Granted, Lomax was falling a bit, but he was never hitting him.
It was a stepping. Lomax was looking to step back in, wasn't he? And Kapoa was still moving laterally towards the outside, just one of those ones where you've been kind of misstepped. They've gotten the better of you with their footwork, and you just put whatever part of your body you can to try and stop them. And obviously, it didn't work out. Isaac Liu was charged, and Jordan Ricci has taken the early guilty plea and has been fined $3,000. That's a pretty long one. All right. Let's start with the NRLW, because we haven't talked about that so far tonight. And can I just do a shout out to one of our listeners, Chris Walters, who got in touch with the podcast and wanted to, thank, but then also say it's been the best coverage he's seen of the NRL or heard of the NRLW outside of just the big name players and outside of the mainstream media and that. So thanks for that, Chris. It's really, really appreciate hearing that, because he's new to it as well and doesn't know the players and that. And we're not pros or anything like that, but we're trying to learn a bit more about the women's game each week. So it's an interesting looking ladder after two rounds. Three teams have won two, three teams have lost two. And one of the teams that has lost two has been the most successful club of the NRLW in the Brisbane Broncos. They were pretty much shellacked 28-8 by the Roosters up at Suncorp Stadium. It was a one-off game there for the two teams. The most impressive thing about the Roosters in this game was some of their big-name players were quiet for their standards. Isabel Kelly didn't do that much compared to what she usually does. Jess Sergis had a solid game without being outstanding. But Sammy Bremner continues to look awesome in her return two games in. And who was the other one? Destiny Brill. She absolutely ripped the Broncos up through the middle. She's the dummy half for the Roosters, and she was just running riot. Quick play the balls. She had her head up. She was off, turning the Brisbane forwards around, and it was just creating havoc. One of the plays of the game, though, was by Taryn Aiken, the Broncos 5'8", who had a try-saving tackle on Jess Sergis over the sideline, right at the corner. If you haven't seen that, check the replay out and look at what happens to Taryn Aiken's back. I watched that and just went, there is no NRL player whose spine would still be working after bending like she did. It was like almost a slow motion.
It's like her neck was a right angle to the rest of her spine.
It was
horrible.
This isn't going to sound right with the women's team. It was like a balls to the wall tackle. They had to put her whole body into it because she's slight compared to Sergis to get the force required to take her over the sideline. And then, oh man, I'm just like thinking about it. My back's hurting. But the Broncos are shining light.
She was in everything positive for the Broncos. Scored both tries. And obviously had that moment as well. But I don't know. What can you say about the Roosters? They're just they're a scary team. They've had a lot of turnover in the off season as well. But this is their forwards. Like their forwards are just dominating, and then
Olivia
the
Koenig.
Back line and spine. Yeah.
She's coming along
and
so
you're
great.
Right. Destiny Brill, like, she's a Queensland girl as well, and I think she played for the Titans, but yeah. That's a massive pickup because, yeah, the Roosters lost Olivia Higgins to the Knights last year and for this season, and to pick someone up with Brill's capabilities, like, and then Bremner, like, she's everyone sort of forgets how good she was before she missed the last two seasons with obviously having kids and stuff, but it's looking, I know it's only two games in, but it's looking like it's going back to back for them. They've been a class above so far.
Yeah, they really have been. Like, Sir just played 36 minutes out of that, which saw a shift in the back line. I believe that's when Koenig went to, gotta get this right. Did Koenig go to the centres?
I can't remember.
No, I can't remember that either. But another player that really impressed me was Shaun Burton, who came off the bench in number 15, played 45 minutes off the bench. And it was hard to tie down the position she was playing. She almost looked as though she was playing a roving lock sort of position. She was popping up on both sides of the field through the middle. But she was really impressive. And that's one, she's a player I'm going to keep an eye on and have a look at her progress through the year. Because she hasn't been one of the key players to focus on. From my point of view anyway, I don't know her background. But Racine McGregor as well, she, as the Roosters' dummy half, outplayed Ali Brigginshaw in all facets of the game. You don't say that very often. 28-8, Roosters over the Broncos. Second game of the weekend was the pick of the games, in my opinion, for the NRLW. Dragons 16 getting over the Eels 10. And to me, the player of the match in this one was on the losing side, the Eels fullback. I want to get her name right here.
Gail Broughton.
Thank you. She's come in NRL rugby sevens player out of New Zealand, absolute legend of rugby sevens over there. Came in due to Betel Vete Walsh ACL injury and took a bit of time to find her feet last week, out of position a couple of times, but she is skilled. And the replays of I think she had, two try assists and a try? A try assist and a try.
Yeah, she put Panattani away a couple of times.
Yeah. Just
the footwork. I don't know what's more silky, the footwork or the ball playing.
The hands,
like,
yeah.
She just had this little like skip out, then straighten, and it just drew two defenders in, which got Panattani in space. And Panattani was probably a close second best on the field.
Yes.
If the Dally M points went 3 points to Broughton and 2 points to Panattani or vice versa, even though the Dragons won, you'd be like, probably fair
makes
enough.
Sense. Yeah, if you don't watch any NRLW or you're getting used to it, it was kind of like carbon copies of what happened with Panattani as breaking through the line, and it was due to Broughton on the inside drawing the defense in, and it was very similar to a Kalen Ponga or a Scott Drinkwater style move where they've got the ball out in the two hands and you know they've got the pace and the footwork, but when they turn it on, you still can't stop it kind of thing when it works out that well. Similar style of move. And when she scored a try, right up to the Parramatta fans in the crowd, showed how much it meant to her and what playing the NRLW means. And there was the Eels had the running in the first half. They're up 10-8, even though the Dragons had scored the two early tries. So Dragons went across in the, what was it? Because it was a bit arm wrestle for the first 10. I'm going to have to bring it up.
We scored 15th and 19th minute.
Oh, yeah. Cool. I missed that. 15th and 19th. And then Parramatta came back and they finished the first half the stronger of the two squads. And they went into halftime at a 10-8. Lead, and to me, I thought like Parramatta had a chance of finishing this one off, but Dragons kept them scoreless in the second half and scored two more tries of their own, and a rare off day for Rachel Pearson with the conversion kicking 0 for 4 She's generally one of the better kickers. To me, Toni Gardo, her second half, once she pretty much decided to get involved, but she really made her involvement count more so in the second half, I thought. And Paige McGregor getting across for a double. Are they her first two of the season?
Nah, she scored last week as well. She's got to be one of the most underrated players in the NRLW, I reckon. She's
a cracker.
I watched her last year, and every week Jamie Sauer would just give her the toughest defensive
matchup.
She'd have Sergis or Kelly in amongst those games. If one person was hurting more than the other, she'd move to that side of the field. And then you're starting to see this year she's getting a lot more quality ball, and she's doing a lot with it. That left edge of ours with, we've got Tegan Berry on the wing, Paige McGregor at centre, Talia Fuimano at six, and then Toni Gardo sweeping out the back of that. I can see why Tegan Berry
is.
Yeah, I can see why Tegan Berry put her hand up to move to left wing. She's got 3 tries in 2 weeks. I think she's the equal leading try scorer in NRLW history. Yeah. Cool. She only played 10 games, I think. So
you got Andy Robinson on the other wing. So it's a pretty cracking back five. And then you got Rachel Pearson in at half, pretty much steering the show. So yeah, Dragons looking good for their win. I don't have as much to say about the last game. It's the only one of the three I didn't get to watch on the weekend. But Knights 16 over Titans 12. So Knights make it back-to-back wins, back-to-back losses for the Titans. Did you get to see this one at all?
I only saw the start of it. I can't comment too much on this one either. I saw it was a bit of an arm wrestle, actually. It wasn't how I thought it was going to play out. But full credit to Titans. After last week, I think, we beat them quite convincingly, and Newcastle put a score on Brisbane. So I think everyone sort of thought the same thing would happen here. But they played pretty well from what I saw. They've still got, I think it'll take a while for their spine to probably connect a bit, because you got Lauren Brown's moved.
Yeah, she came in
to
from
7. Yeah, from the Broncos. She
Broncos,
was
that's
the Broncos,
right.
You've had Appy Nichols has come in as well, and that's moved then Polite to the centre. So I think they got plenty of strike there. It's just getting it all together, I think. And with the new coach as well. Yeah, that's right. I think they'll be a team that improves across the competition. And, if they do slide into that fourth position, they could be a dangerous floater. But Steph Hancock, man.
Yeah, 3 tries in 2 weeks for the 40-year-old.
She's a try-scoring machine. Her and Georgia Hale were strong from what I saw. And, you got the usual suspects in the Knights team that just turn up and do their job.
Are you any way surprised how quickly the Knights have gelled, considering the amount of turnover they had?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember talking with you a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, I think they'll be a team that, the first 2 weeks, they might drop those games because there's been so much turnover. And in key positions too, like Tamika Upton's come in, Jesse Southwell's new, Olivia Higgins is new. So 3 of their spine members haven't played together at club level before. So, yeah, very surprised. But, they've been rewarded for their smart recruitment, though. And, the reason those girls went there, and they all said it, is because of the systems they've got in place there for the female rugby league. They talked about how good Blake Green was, and the pathways they had set up there, and they wanted to be a part of it. So, they went through. They didn't win a game at all last season, so they went through a tough period, as Knights fans would be used to. But, it's good to see persistence has paid off getting into the second season this year.
I was going to say it's almost like they're putting all of their resources and develop into the women's team. So, like I said, after 3 rounds, you got the Roosters, Dragons, and Knights. 2
Newcastle.
Wins, 0 losses, and Broncos, Titans, and Parramatta yet to pick up a win for the season. All right. We're going to jump to the NRL matches. We're going to focus specifically on the games that had an influence on the finals table. And we're going to start with Thursday night's game. Broncos 6 defeated by the Eels. Sorry, I did that so bad. I should have said Eels 53 defeating the Broncos 6. Bloody Monday night. Was that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tries to 1? Mitch Moses, 8 out of 9 conversions. Some of his play is absolutely electric to watch. He a lot spoken about Gutherson and his influence and Dylan Brown and his season that he's had. To me, Parramatta lose the most when Moses is out of any of those three. Some of his vision on the weekend, his decision making, and then the execution, the flat cutout balls, the use of the space around him to make, sorry, the use of the ball in his hands to create more space for his support players is still one of his most underrated aspects of his game, in my opinion. Because I think the defense, they respect the speed that he has and they sit back, but sometimes they respect it almost too much and give him enough space. Then when he does go at them, they're flat-footed, and that just allows him then just to rip it wide on either side, either for Brown sweeping around, or he plays short to Sean Lane on one side, or for Papali'i on the other side. He's just, when he's on form, and I hate to say it because he's freaking Parramatta, he's one of my favourite halves to watch.
He's really, this year he's developed the ability to play the short side, and that's one thing he's doing. He's just playing it at a pace, and just, you're right, he's a running threat. He's got the long ball, he's got the short ball, he can put it on the toe. Like, you've seen tries where he's had no room down the short side, put it on the toe, then put it on the toe again for himself. Like, he's set up or scored tries in that many different ways. Mate, I've said it all year, I'm big on Para. They're peaking at the right time. Their spine is clicking. That left edge, the combination between Dylan Brown and Sean Lane is, I reckon, it's the best half back row combination this season.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting around in the comp at the moment. I don't think anyone else can. I can't think of anyone else that's probably at the same level as them. But, mate, if they get it right, I don't think anyone can beat them.
My only concern is. And they've gone away to dispel it this year with gritty wins over Penrith and Melbourne. Can they control a game once they get in front in the finals? Can they shut the game down and not allow a Penrith or a Melbourne or a Roosters to get back in once they're in front? So we know they've got no trouble scoring points, but systems do change in the finals. Yeah, that they did a lot better of it this year in the regular season than they've done in previous years. But then we also saw games like against the Cowboys in Darwin, where once the other team got on a roll, they couldn't stop them. So what's going to happen in the finals if that occurs, if that happens? I did see someone say, oh, I don't know who I'm going to go for tonight. It's Reynolds 250th and the boys will get up for that. Oh, Parramatta on a roll. I went, Reynolds has been there for a season. If it was Rabbitohs and he was playing his 250th or whatever, to me, that would have made a much bigger difference. And then with him, well, to me, it was not a hard tip at all, the way that the two teams have been going. And that reason why this was big is that knocked the Broncos out of the eight for the first time in quite a while and really has knocked around their for and against to the point where it's 26, 36, 46. They're 43 points now behind the Raiders and on the same point. So there's a lot of pressure on them, A, to win next week, and B, to win by quite a bit if they want to play finals this season. For the Eels, that puts them on same points as the Storm, or did put them on points with the Storm before the Storm had a chance to play. So 32 points, equaling Storm, they're in fourth position. That brings us to the Storm, who went down by 4 points to the Roosters in Melbourne in probably the most fiery game of the weekend. Roosters got out to the lead in this one. It's not like Melbourne to get shown up early on, especially on their home turf. But they were down, 14-0 at one stage. For Xavier Coates was over in the corner. I was trying to think of the right player. And I don't know. I was watching this. I was impressed with what the Roosters did, but I was still just going, yeah, Melbourne will come back, Melbourne will come back. And they started to show that. And then right when it looked like it was about to roll Melbourne's way, Roosters found a way to bring the momentum back just enough to finish the game, probably the stronger of the two squads, and walk away from Melbourne with a 4-point win. First time they beat Melbourne in 5 attempts or something?
Would have been since the grand final, I reckon, 2018 grand final.
Yeah.
It was far from clinical, but...
Oh, yeah. Not the highest quality
game. I was pretty confident on the Roosters winning this one going in. I couldn't believe how many people tipped the Storm. I think the Storm's form had probably been made to look better. Yeah, made to look better just on who they'd beaten. If you look back at it, and the Roosters had, you know, they'd beaten the Cowboys, they'd won 6 in a row. So, yeah, like I said, they were completely dominating the game until that 10-minute period when
right before
Hargraves got binned, and then that's when the Storm scored, I think, the first time.
Yeah.
And it just gave them that sniff just before halftime. So I don't think – obviously Trent Robinson would be happy with the win, but I don't think he'd be overly happy with the second half because there were so many unforced errors from the Roosters that just invited the Storm back into it. He'll be happy with the defensive result. And there were a couple, I guess, close calls where, you know, some Storm players got held up, and which is just great scramble defense, but it's so easily could have gone the other way that game. So
So to look at
that, I think
I
was just going to say, I think probably the hardest thing for the Roosters coming out of that's losing Tupou. It could be for a few weeks. Lindsay Collins is gone. Victor Radley could be out for a week or two. So. I think that's probably the biggest negatives coming out of that form.
Yeah, just on that, the unforced errors. So Roosters had 10, but Melbourne had 14. That was the biggest thing I picked up. Two of the teams here with the amount of errors they made. And sometimes that happens when you've got two teams of similar quality going at each other. They're forcing a play that they may not have forced against, say, another opponent because they're under more pressure or whatever it is. But interestingly as well, Melbourne had 6 line breaks to 2 and 40 tackle breaks to 23. So there were parts of the game where they made the most of their opportunity, but they had less possession and the completion rate was only 75%. So to me, I get your point of how many people tip Melbourne. I only tip Melbourne because they're at home. If this was in Sydney, I was tipping the Roosters. I had this as a coin toss. And I just thought Melbourne's last home game of the season, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking there's going to be a big, big crowd down there. And that was, it was pretty much packed. That's the only reason. But so that with Parramatta winning and Storm losing, that's why they're now tied on points in fourth and fifth position going into the last round where coincidentally they're playing each other with the winner. Likely finishing in fourth with the Cowboys taking on most likely a weakened Penrith side. But say the Cowboys lose, Storm win, they could go into third and Cowboys could drop to fourth. So there's still quite a bit to play for. Not a lot to talk about this game, but the result's important. Raiders 48 over Seagulls 6. Down Canberra. What that does for Canberra is put them on the same points as the Broncos, but now with a much better for and against. So that big win coupled with the Broncos' big loss now puts them at 17 points in the for and against column to the Broncos minus 26. So Penrith had to win. They had to win big and hope Broncos, they'd already seen the Broncos lose big. And that win specifically should be enough to put them in the eighth position with the West Tigers to come in the final round?
It just, honestly, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's still another curveball to come right this weekend. Like, it just seems like a few weeks ago, like, the top eight's set. No one, it's not changing. And then obviously the Broncos have fallen off a cliff and Canberra have come flying home. But I just feel like there's something that's left up the sleeve to throw at us. But yeah, I didn't actually get to catch this game, but just watched.
You caught the money out of it, bloody hell.
Yeah, Hudson Young, my boy. Yeah, it's just, I think you guys are reminding me of the Dragons of last year. If, you know, we had the barbecue incident, yeah. And then it's just having like winning the game after that. And I think you guys are just waiting for the season to be over and done with.
Yeah.
Bring on Mad Monday.
I don't know. They're allowed to drink. We'll see. Sharks 16 defeating the Bulldogs 0. That put the Sharks in outright second position before the Cowboys had a chance to play. Their form the last five games, five wins, and they've got the Knights in the final match. So, yeah, if they pick up a win in the final round, that'll see them secure outright second, regardless of what the Cowboys do. If they do lose in the final round, the Cowboys win, there could be a change over there based on the for and against. And the final game we'll actually discuss is Rabbitohs 20 over the Cowboys 10. Cowboys' second loss to a top team in the last few weeks, and they haven't been the team that they've been for like 18 of the previous 20. Bit of fatigue maybe coming into the Cowboys. Todd Payton talked about that last year with the overtraining in preseason early in the season and said that it was going to be something that they would correct this year. Not great signs coming into the finals. They will have one more chance, obviously, to rectify it next week. And the Rabbitohs picking up a win before their big showdown against the Roosters next week at the brand new Sydney Football Stadium.
Yeah, the this is an odd game because the Bunnies didn't play that well. They were very scrappy, and it wasn't as good a quality game of footy as I thought it was going to be. But I think the Cowboys really missed Tom Dearden. They looked so lost in attack. And you look, Lord, they scored 10 points. One of those tries was from a 60-metre Kyle Felt chip and chase and then put it on the boot again, which was probably close to one of the tries of the year.
Mm.
But other than that, they just...
That was in the 68th minute too. Like,
yeah.
After scoring in the ninth, it's a fair bit of time between meat pies for the Cowboys compared to what we've seen this year.
Yeah, yeah. But... yeah, well, Souths has got the job done. They did what they had to do, and you know they've locked up their finals berth now. And all eyes move to round 25 at Allianz.
No, that's going to be that's been building for so many things. The spite between the two teams of home games for 2023, it's going to be a cracker. And the final two games will probably go down as the two most, I'd say, entertaining games of the weekend. Not from any quality point of view, but just for the drama of the Tigers and Dragons match, where neither team had it. Well, sorry, the Tigers had something to play for, not getting the wooden spoon for the first time in their history. Dragons had nothing to play for, really. And Tigers were making them look like shit, but up in half time, it was like 16-6 at half time. And you know, I watched the condensed game of this on like the 28-minute game or something. And Jock Madden looked really impressive, and it's been nice to see him get an extended run for the Tigers. I think Stafford Toa has had a really good second half of the season. And then for the Dragons, I agree with your Zach Lomax call earlier. And I just love watching Jaden Sewer, and he had the injuries early on the season, but it's good to see him finishing on a high note. Hopefully he can roll it into one more round.
Yeah, I thought Jack DeBellin was strong. He had probably two real big moments in the game. In the first half, they made a break literally 5 minutes from our try line. He come, who else but Jack DeBellin coming across and diving, try-saving tackle. and then had the big play, putting Jackson Ford over for the score equal. Yeah, so he
was that the one when Jock Madden shot out of the line way early and went for the
Yeah, I think so. Kelma Tuolagi just got stuck ball watching De Bellin, which is amazing what happens when a ball carrier holds it in two hands out in front of him. It's amazing what it does to the defensive line,
No way.
And then Jack Bird had a really strong second half after what was the dumbest sin binning I've ever seen. I saw a stat today. We've had 12 sin binnings and a send-off this year, which is 3 more sin binnings than any other club.
I feel like a lot of them's happened in only in the last few weeks as well.
Yeah. Oh, Tarek Sims. Jaden Sewell got a couple at the start of the year.
Yeah, he did. Tarek he was on a roll.
A couple. That's right. Yeah. Cody Ramsey's one was bullshit.
Oh, yeah, that was not a Simbin offense. It was too far out for the line, and the impact that he had was, like, to me, that was a embellishment. Yeah, he touched him, but anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely a penalty. And they was, 24-22, probably one that they, at times in this game, didn't really look as though they deserved they should have won.
That first half was disgusting.
It wasn't great.
Anyway.
And then you had the shootout up on the Gold Coast. 36-26 Titans over the Knights. Halftime 24-10. So second half 16-12 Knights. The battle of between Dane Gagai and
Brian Kelly
was fucking incredible because neither of them could defend each other all game. Yeah,
defense was optional.
Oh, like Kelly was just making Gagai look pedestrian in the first half, and then Gagai did the same to Kelly in the second half. Like the in and out footwork of both of them throughout the game against each other was so good. But on the other end was so bad. And then the biggest mismatch of height in NRL history, Edric Lee versus Corey Thompson on the wing. I don't even know why Edric Lee jumped. He could have literally just stood there and caught it and just put it down. Credit to Corey Thompson for trying, but then after he scored the try, Thompson's just standing there with his hands on his hips bent over like, what the fuck do you want me to do? This guy's like 12 foot. Brimson finishing off with a double after having a hand in what seemed like almost every bloody try. And it was just that awesome game of two bottom eight sides just fucking... I'll defend if you run right at me, but as soon as you're half a meter away, fuck that. I'm not making the effort.
When they get it right, the time, geez, they're exciting to watch.
Like, that Marju try.
Yeah. You got Campbell, you got Brimson, Tino, then the edges, you got Fermor and Fifita. The last month, it's amazing what happens when they learn how to give Fifita quality ball because Jeezy's look good.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of giving him the ball with four people on top of him flat-footed. I'm still not sure on how the Kieran Foran signing is going to work. I'm not sure if he's the right halfback for him. I hope it works for them. But there's so much excitement there. Like, and if they can get it right, and they're all young. Like, they're only probably two or three signings off being that top eight team again. Like, if you really look at it, like, there's so much excitement there. But obviously, I'm not getting too carried away with a win over Newcastle. But, you know, a Titans team 2-3 months ago with a guy sent off with 30 minutes to go, they aren't winning that game.
No. It's – I messaged you guys last night. It's going to be hard to watch Tanner Boyd or Toby Sexton in reserve grade next year. And Tanner Boyd's been playing well. But they're not going to drop Brimson. They're not going to be dropping Campbell.
No.
So, and they haven't signed Foran for him to play off the bench. So, unless you're going to shift Boyd back to the bench, and they've got Sam Verrills. So, you're not going to put Boyd into dummy half. So, yeah. It's a good problem to have. It is. That Jaden Campbell kick to Marju's try, where if you hadn't seen it, the ball, it was like a broken play. They'd had a fifth tackle option. And they jumped up, they batted it back, and the ball came down to Jaden Campbell. And when he caught it, he had his back to the try line. He ran himself around, looked up, and then just dropped it. And it was a kick in the backfield off the outside of his boot while running laterally to the try line, and open space for Marju to finish up. It was awesome. That's just
natural.
That's
just natural talent. Oh. This is natural talent.
It was so good. You can't
coach that.
Nah.
Yeah.
The front on shot where you saw his vision, where his head look up, and he didn't even look at the ball. He just dropped the ball, and his foot. He knew where his foot was going to be. He knew where the ball was going to be. His head was up the whole time. It was so good. And I agree. They're such a good team to watch when they're on, and they are absolutely pathetic when they are off. It's opposite ends.
I think the less said about the Knights, the better.
Yeah. Like, Gago's tries were great to watch. He's still one of my favourite players, and his defence has definitely declined over the last couple of seasons, but shit, he's good to watch as well. Him versus Brian Kelly was one of the best matchups of the weekend, just for entertainment.
Mm. All right. And then I was going to say, Brian Kelly got sent off, and then poor Fermor was getting torched out there.
He was getting ripped. He's quick for a second row, but the second row are quick and a centre quick. Yeah. It's amazing how some players can look so fast against their peers and then so slow against those that are actually meant to be fast.
Straight line running. Yeah. Oh, no.
I remember when George Tafua was in his prime as a Manly fan. You want George Tafua getting the ball 10 metres out, just running through people. He gets the ball in open space 40 metres out. You're just like, fucking just kick it, man. You're going to get caught.
Mate, that Tau Tau Moga intercept was me on debut. That's how slow I was running. Seriously.
And you see how exhausted he was once he got tackled out? Oh, he was just like...
I don't know. What was he doing? Like, just, you were never going to make the field. Anyway.
Oh, it's so good to watch. Oh, fuck. That's so funny. All right. Going into the final round, we've got Titans on 12. So that win was huge for them. That puts them 2 points above the West Tigers. Going to the final round. So West Tigers will have Canberra, who will be playing a full-strength squad because they want to lock down the eighth position. And you got Titans versus the Warriors. So you kind of got to give the edge to the Titans there, and this could be the first wooden spoon in West Tigers history, which I'm sorry, Tigers fans, I actually found that hard to believe. I thought you'd been down there before.
No, they finished ninth, man.
Ninth, that's right, sorry. Let's jump up to the eight. So the big things that could change, and we'll go into more detail in the preview show, Broncos and Raiders tied on 28 points. So a Raiders win confirms their eighth position, you'd say, based off for and against. If they both win, Broncos have to win by a margin, like 40 plus or something like that. Rabbitohs and Roosters both on 30 points, for and against. Roosters have the big advantage there. So, and that's going to be, they're playing head to head. I love it how this happens. Winner of that will most likely finish sixth. Sorry. And then you've got Storm and Eels directly above them. They're versing each other, which is awesome. So fourth through to seventh are all versing each other in some format.
And then you got first versus third.
Yeah, but Penrith are most likely going to rest some players because they can't get caught. They're travelling up to Townsville, save some travel mileage, all that sort of stuff. I just want to throw one last thing Wal's way. Where's the value at for the premiership if we're looking at the odds now? Last time we did this was a few weeks ago, and I was thinking Roosters at, I think it was $15 at that point. We're looking pretty good. So they're into $9 at the moment, which is still pretty good, I reckon. Penrith at $2.10 to win the premiership. Storm are at $6.50. Then you've got the Sharks at $8. Roosters at $9. Cowboys at $12. Eels at $12. Rabbitohs at $15. And Raiders at $91.
Power at $12, right?
Yeah, so that was pretty much where the Roosters were at 2-3 weeks ago. And I went, that's my, but yeah, I'd say they Eels at 12. I still reckon Roosters at $9 is value. Like the way that they're looking.
You're not going to bet against them, are you?
Nah, I thought they'd be shorter than this by now. I get because they don't have the two lives in the finals. I know that's going to weigh against them in the minds of the bookies. One and done in the position that they're in. But they're coming into the finals in the best form of any team. I know the Sharks are 5-0 as well, but just the quality of opposition the Roosters have beaten and the way that they've done it. So the start of the season, my grand final prediction was Eels versus Roosters, and they're sitting in fifth and sixth, and they're coming in looking all right. So the only reason I would watch that grand final is this podcast, because outside of the Knights, they're my two least favourite teams. So
it'd be a good grand final, though. It'd be a quality grand final.
It would. It'd be great if I could just watch it on mute. Pretend it's two other teams. They should just wear like just standard basic jerseys.
Black and white jerseys.
Yeah, that's it. And then it'd be brilliant. All right. Well, thanks for jumping in.
All good, Matt.
It should be thanks, Adam, for jumping in, because he's been the missing one lately, I should say. So we'll get this out to you guys, and we'll have our final regular season preview show probably Thursday night. So I've got girls rugby, and they're in the semi-finals. So I won't be getting home till late on that one. So it's probably going to be a Thursday nighter again. All right. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.